grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dudes and Beer podcast. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming at you in a pre-recorded fashion this week. I'm in Austin right now. Well, technically, I'm bi-locating. I'm here with you on what is now apparently Meta, no longer Facebook. Welcome all you Meta users out there. whatever that's about. It's been an interesting last few weeks, folks. Let's just say that. I have been on the road like crazy, kind of winding up this year of road gigs, really getting ready to just kind of put full force into Curious Realm and other projects here at home. I cannot wait for that. And I cannot wait to start bringing you guys more entertainment. Once again, I cannot thank y'all enough for the support that y'all have given myself, this show, our missions, and our messages over the last many years, almost 6 years now. And thank you so much for not only the nominations, but the votes for the news and politics category in the People's Choice Podcast Awards. We were, of course, chosen for that. So thank you guys. Those applause are for you. Our guest tonight, we're going to be getting into it here in just a minute. Our good friend Mike Turber from 5x5 News is here to talk about not only the Afghanistani exfiltration that is going on, but also to talk about Tiger King 2. He was one of the many people who was in the background investigating, diving, cadaver dogs involved, all kinds of things. So we're going to be getting into some Tiger King stuff. We're going to be getting into all that when we come back from our messages. Yeah, let's check those out. Messages.
Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com.
That's right, folks. PodcastCadet.com is your home for everything podcast-related. I love this industry so much that I actively helped found PodcastCadet.com to help people just like you start podcasts. So I unashamedly promote it all the time. Stop on by, check it out, PodcastCadet.com. Dudes20 is the code that you want to use. And speaking of codes, while you're online, stop on by our other good friends over at True Hymn Science, TrueHymnScience.com. Dudes7 is the code that you want to use. Man, since I found True Hymn Science, I will admit the fact that I have become a raging fan of CBD. And the benefits are absolutely amazing. We just had actually Russell Dowden, the host of Texas Hemp reporter on the Texas Hemp Show, brought to you by the Texas Hemp Reporter, on talking about CBD and the health benefits of it, things like that. Stop on by, check it out. TrueHempScience.com, your home of some of the best darn CBD product that you can get, made right here in Austin, Texas. Full spigeric process used in its creation. Whole plant medicine is what they believe in. Every part of the plant is used, from the stem to the bud to the seeds to the root, trimming, everything. Stop on by, check it out. TrueHempScience is the website. Dudes7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. And mind you, get two, count them, two hand-size edible cookies or brownies of 25 milligrams each for free at TrueHempScience.com. Code DUDE7. Go check it out. Our guest tonight, Our guest tonight, so entirely excited to have our good friend back. Welcome back to the show, Mike Turber.
I am doing splendiferous, which is that word I use only with you, I guess.
Am I about to have to go Art Bell and tell you to take me off speakerphone?
Oh, God. Is it really echoing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have anything on the background, though.
Funny.
Okay, let me see if I can switch something up here. Kill that. I've got a signal on, and it should.
Yeah?
Is it better now?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, signal was on, and I think, because I'm monitoring my signal for Afghanistan, so that's...
Yeah.
That's how we all contact each other, is this signal.
Yep, absolutely. That is a very secure app for such things.
Yes, it is.
I am still coming back.
You are still echoing?
I am.
Let me pull this further. It's supposed to be, there's nothing's changed since, other than I just turned the signal off. That should be good. You want to dial me right back real quick?
Sure, I can do that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Well, let's give Mike Turber a second there to get his phone turned into the correct mode there. Sorry for that, folks. He has been actively dealing with exfiltration of people all day long, literally all day, every day, over the last many weeks since the situation in Afghanistan arose. So, like he said, he has been securely monitoring communications through Signal. That is a great secure app if you want secure messaging between closed parties, things like that. It's a great route to go. Let's see what happens here if we give him a call back, folks.
Well, hello there, Mr. Chris. How are you?
Hello. I'm just playing. Yes, that killed it. That killed
it. Cool. All right,
absolutely.
Good.
How have you been, my friend? I mean, quite obviously busy with the exfiltration process, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, I've been running around with my head cut off. I feel like I'm you know, it's that multitasking to the point where you get to that you're not doing 100% on any one thing that you're used to doing, because normally I try to put all my efforts into whatever it is I'm working on at the moment. And right now it's just, that's not working out, because this Afghanistan thing is truly throwing a monkey wrench into that. But you know, it is what it is, but you know, it's doing the right thing. And, you know, saving people's lives is, you definitely can't sit there and go, well, gee, I wonder if I should make a video about UFOs or should I save some people's lives?
How should I spend my 3 hours today?
Yeah, exactly. And I get that on Twitter. So some people say, where's that video you promised on the blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, well, you know, kind of having to deal with this and this. Yeah. And then, of course, the trolls still don't care. They just go after
you. Bringing up the trail behind the 3,000 people I have to exfiltrate right now.
Exactly.
Let's actually get into that real quick, at least as deep as you can get into it. I mean, that's always the caveat with you, Mike, is how deep you can actually get into a topic. because so many times you are actively amid investigation or amid process with something. But
right, you know, some things get a little tricky. Afghanistan, what's the only thing tricky about it is, I mean, not really. I mean, the whole thing is this is the most frustrating thing I think I've ever done. It is extremely aggravating at what our country has done, and you know, I'm a patriot. I love our country. I love everything about it. But there are some decisions that were made that, you know, and I don't want to get into a political pissing match with anyone on this issue, but they have to understand it from our standpoint. After we left, which we left essentially 24 hours early, which kind of threw a little monkey wrench into some things. The State Department believes there's only 100 American citizens in Afghanistan. Well, even I've got more than that on my list alone, and that I'm not including anyone else's list, just my list.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. And you wonder where these numbers come from. And then, you know, we have 350 that we can directly account for. And there's probably more than that. And then you've got all of the visa, you know, the green card holders. You've got the different statuses of people trying to obtain citizenship. And then you have the people that helped us out that have not done any paperwork, but they're going to get killed if we don't get them out of there. And it's, man, this is just the slowest turning cogwheel that you'll ever see as far as getting people out of there. It's very frustrating. Yeah. It's, you know, you're limited on resources. It's not like we, you know, we have access, you know, a lot of temporarily had access to the satellites for a few days until they got mad at me. Anyway, that's another story.
Well, and that's just it though. And that's what a lot of people don't realize is the fact that like these efforts are being coordinated by people like you who are quite literally either accessing satellites, air quotes being used on air right now, or renting time on satellites or renting time with charter companies flying planes, things like that. There were a few airlines. I think every airline like contributed a few planes at the beginning of it, like those first 3 days that we saw where it was just train after train after train.
No, those are paid for. Those are $500 to $700,000 per flight.
Yep.
That's how much they cost.
Yeah.
And you know, there was three planes that were on the tarmac, which is, I don't even know why I use the word tarmac. It's not a real word, but everybody associates with it. There are no tarmacs anymore. But anyway, I'll tell you that one another time. But those three planes that were on the ground at Mazar Sharif Airport, those planes were basically just sitting there. They had been there for a week, and there was, I know the reasons why the planes couldn't take back off. Part of it had to do with money and some other stuff. But we had a Texas senator that came on, and I'm watching Fox News, and boom, this Texas senator, I'll leave his name out of it because I called his office and blasted them. But he came on and said, there is an active hostage situation going on at Mazar Sharif Airport. And I'm like going, what? I just had people literally leave the airport not 30 minutes before he went on air, and there's nothing going on. And he says, there are three planes there, and inside the planes, there are American and Afghan hostages. And I'm like going, oh, my God, this guy has no clue what he's doing. He's about to ruin a lot that we're doing, because that was just going to bring a lot of attention to the airports. And we didn't really want that. We have people trying to get out of there. And I had some images of people that were at the airport that I had turned in for intelligence gathering reasons, of certain the people that were there. There were some people that they needed to confirm if they were there or not. So I had my people that were there actually took pictures, sent them to me, and I sent them on in the state.
Yeah.
And so while this is going on, that's when I see this news report. This guy comes on. So those kind of situations, it really tells me that one hand does not know what all the other hands and fingers and toes are doing.
Oh, God.
And in our government. And it's fairly typical. We get that. And we know that this is a very compartmentalized situation as well. Even though this is not an official government function of us going in there and trying to get these people out, the government is involved.
Yeah,
because we have to send all this information to the State Department because they have to do the pre-screening process, all this stuff, or else the plane cannot land. They can get on the plane, but then the plane can't land, you know, anywhere. But, you know, also the people are not coming directly to the United States for the most part. They're going to different areas and stuff like that. So a lot of people that are worried about that, their fears can be quelled. But here's a couple of case in points. I sent you some screenshots of the conversation I had today, actually, with a group. There's a family. I won't say their location, but there's a family in Afghanistan. The father and the mother are hospitalized currently. And the children, which amounts to a larger portion of females to males, literally 5-1, as far as the, yeah. So they're in hiding at a house or apartment or wherever they are, and I'm in contact. You know, I was in contact with the father daily. And the person who, you know, gave me this particular family to look after, because the person trusts me or whatever, as far as handling this family, is a very high ranking U.S. official. And, I mean, he was a director of a security something. We'll just call it that. Wow. And so I was handpicked to take these people along with some, you know, about 100 other people as well that they gave me. And so what I do is each day I try to find them, you know, take care of them, make sure they're everything's good. You know, see if there's anything going on or they, you know, they give me information, I'm giving back information, but at the same time, we're trying to get them on a flight out of there, get them across the border landwise, however it is, we got to get them out of there, but we're trying to exfil these people. So, you know, when both parents went into the hospital, now we're stuck with a situation where, you know, the landlord, they can't pay, the kids can't pay their rent and stuff like this. The landlord is asking for it, or he'll call the police. And the police in there, you know, the police in Afghanistan are not police, or they're Taliban. And if they get there to that house, they're just going to wipe this whole family out, especially with this, the person, one of the person's previous jobs, you know. And so this is the daily thing that you... You know, you see the conversations that I have, and you know that this is a very sad possible outcome. I haven't lost anyone yet, but I am so scared that this may be maybe I don't even want to say it. I don't want to jinx myself or anything like that. But you know what I'm saying. It's just I don't want to go there, but I'm going to remain positive. And at this point, all they need is rent to pay this guy, or I need to move him to a different location. Can't do either one. You know, can't really get either one done. You know, there's no funding. There's not like the State Department is taking care of anything. And there, you know,
there's no relief funds coming.
No, there's not. There's not like, you know, $1.7 trillion. By the way, we screwed up in Afghanistan. Let's help these people that are truly trying to do the job that we didn't, you know, do or finish. And let's support them. You know, if they can do arms for drugs,
democracy though.
Not even democracy. I don't care. Bring back Oliver North. Go sell some guns. Buy some drugs. Give me the cash. I don't care. Whatever it takes to get these people out of there. You know, that's what needs to be done. And it's just not happening. And
well, so one of two things needs to be done, Mike. Either you get people out.
Mm-hmm.
Or B, you accept responsibility.
Yeah.
Unbridled full responsibility for the situation that's going on that's just not even still being covered by the news. It was covered for like that week and a half, and that's it.
That's it. That's it. And you would not believe how many other – I'm not a reporter. I'm a journalist. But, how many journalists or reporters –
now, man?
It's over 5,000.
Wow. Wow. Yep. 5,000 individuals on your exfiltration list from Afghanistan.
Yep. That's over five.
That is heart wrenching, man, because you are like you're a tooth on a cog. You aren't even a cog.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I have the largest list of any entity. I think I have the largest single list. I think it's because of the coordination efforts that we did between groups and stuff like this. So that's part of it. I'm not saying that I acquired these people directly. Most of it is from people saying, hey, we remember you from, you know, before and other things you've done. And can you help us out with this?
Yeah.
And that's when I got on board with the satellite thing. And, you know, and then 4 days later, the national, we'll just say the National Geospatial agency decided to shut that down. And I'm like, I was so taken aback by this. And yeah, I'm going to throw them under the bus. I don't care because I'll show you the email. They actually sent an email to me saying that I was trying to acquire images that were not, I was not supposed to see. And I'm sitting there going, okay, I have the email from them telling me how to do it, telling me what to do, and to get a sponsor from the government, which I did, which is from the Department of Homeland Security. You can't really get much higher than that. And so we had everything in our ducks in a row. And then all of a sudden, boom, it shut down. I was like, what's going on? So sent him a message. And next thing I know, the conversation I had with the guy, he says, what are you trying to do? And I said, well, I put in the location for Afghanistan. You know, I'm trying to get these images. I need better than 30 centimeter resolution and blah, blah, blah. And I'm used to working your system. I already know how everything works. As you can see, obviously I didn't screw anything up. And he says, yeah, we get all that. We were amazed that you were able to navigate our system so well that that's what freaked us out. And I was like, well, I didn't do anything wrong.
That's why we were asking.
Yeah. I was like, well, I didn't do anything wrong. He says, no, you didn't do anything wrong. It was just the way you were zipping through and getting these images so fast. Yeah. We're not used to seeing that.
What was that third menu you were in, by the way?
Well, it's weird because they have a layered menu. It's funny you mentioned menus. They have a layered menu system. So when you click a button, it actually layers the menu and tells you on future passes. I was actually had the ability to task a satellite on a future pass to take pictures of specific locations.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm used to doing anyway. So I did that. And I guess I'm the only person who's ever done that that's not just literally sitting in their building, right? He had never seen anybody go in and do it. So, and I was like, well, what is there an issue with that? I mean, obviously it was part of the menu. He says, yeah, it was part of the menu for the person that was with Department of Homeland Security. It shouldn't have been there for me. I said, well, that's not my fault. That's your fault when you turn the permissions on. And this email that they sent me, it's so funny. They actually admonished me in the email along with another person who apparently was doing whatever he was doing, but they have us both on the same email.
How dare you use the functions that you helped pay for with your tax dollars?
Exactly. Exactly.
In the menu that they didn't lock down. How dare you?
But what was even weirder is I'm sitting here, I'm reading about this stuff this other guy did, and I'm like going, I'm not this other guy. I'm not associated with this other guy. Why am I reading what you're telling him?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is like private information. I said, I could put this out there and really blast this guy big time because I am the media. And the guy says, what do you mean you're the media? I said, I'm 505 News. I said, you saw it. I mean, where did the email go to? Yeah. I mean, read it. And it was so hilarious. But it was hilarious and frustrating at the same time. So I'm trying to tell this ID guy that I legitimately was supposed to do it. But anyway, long story short, as that ended, it essentially I was trying to be the eyes for our guys on the ground. That way they could go in, do what they needed to do, and I could take a look at anyone going over land, so I could look at the locations and basically see within an hour window or, you know, depending on how old the image was, how a path for them to go that would be relatively safe. That was what I was doing. And they basically ended that. So the frustrating part is we have a thing that was essentially agreed to by, by the president and, the general, I'm brain farting on the general's name. So we're looking at that, and the president said in the Oval Office, he says that we have a bunch of veterans that are out that are doing, you know, these jobs, and we're, we need to support them. And of course, you have General Miley, you have him, you know, agreeing that this should be done. So we felt like that was a green light, and that was part of the mission status when we were filling out the form to get the satellite imagery. We wrote on there, what is the mission that this imagery is going to be needed for? And so I put on the new initiative by the president and the general that they're basically green lighting for us to go in and do this stuff. And obviously that didn't fly over very well, but oh well, it is what it is. But the thing is it's just a trickle coming out of there. There's a total of probably about 80 to 110,000 people that need to come out. And in that list is every imaginable situation that you can come up with. Now, the people that I would say are directly needing to come out, meaning that they directly work for us, not including their family members and anything else like that, it's probably closer to 15,000 American citizens, between 350 and 1,000, maybe 1,200.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Wow. Nowhere near the numbers that we are being told publicly, anything like that.
No. Yeah, they're saying 100 citizens and maybe a few thousand of whatever, and that's not even close. I mean, I could send you my spreadsheet, and you'd probably freak out.
No way tactically that you can say that this would not have been the foreseen outcome of our random withdrawal the way that we withdrew.
There was
a planned withdrawal. Don't get me wrong. It was happening. There were plans for it to happen. We just left before those plans were executed, folks.
Yeah, exactly. And even though we had an extension thing or what have you, the problem is that just like with anything, if you tell people to evacuate because a hurricane's coming, you're going to have the people that hang around because they're not really sure exactly which is going to be more dangerous, you know, these kind of things, whatever these situations are. But there's particular individuals that they should have fast-tracked a long time ago to get those through. If we have a person that we promise, hey, you be an interpreter for us, and when all this is done, we guarantee your safety, and we're going to bring you back to the United States. You and your whole family, you're going to come back, and you're going to be free, and blah, blah, blah. Man, those are the stories I keep hearing.
Here's a random question. If our withdrawal was known and we were doing it and it was happening and we knew that like the Taliban was going to come in and take things over again, kind of a foregone conclusion intelligence wise, like even admitted so, how come these clearances weren't already made for assets and people to get out?
Well, there's several factors that are involved in doing that for SIV status. The reason that occurred was, one, the intelligence that they claimed they received told them that there would be probably a year before Taliban would be able to take over. Taliban took over in 11 days. Yeah. Said about a year. That's what they were banking on, about a year. Yeah, about a year. So they felt that anyone that didn't get out on that date, they wanted the American citizens out by that date, 100%. Anyone else, they felt like, well, you know, you're in the process, the paperwork process, blah, 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 and, you know, you have some time. No, the very day after, I think it was Moose 83 was the last flight out of there, which was a C-17. And that was his call sign. I think it was Moose 83 or 93. Once they flew out, and you know, you saw the person fall from the plane and all those people grabbing onto it and stuff.
Yeah.
That once that was gone, it started almost immediately. That same day that everyone was trying to rush people, you remember the scenes at the airport with people running to the airport, climbing over walls, people handing babies to walls. Okay. There was a secret location that we were sending our people to. The reason that the bombing, and I can say this now, a lot of people will not have known this. But the bombing that happened in that specific area happened because that was the secret gate that we were getting people into the airport. and they literally had to walk or wade through sewage because it was a sewage pipe that was the secret entrance into the airport on the midline on the south side of the airport. And that was how we were getting people in. And that got kind of shut down. And then whoever walked up with the, you know, with the bomb and did what they did. And so many people were injured. We had, you know, 13 of our guys are gone. And we had well over 100 Afghans injured and a lot killed. And, you know, that it was just a fiasco from the beginning. But that time frame that they believe they had, they obviously don't have. So that's where that came in. There's just, you know, they should have, and I agree, they should have had this fast track beforehand. Now, the suggestion that should have been done, which is, like, I've been suggesting this since day one, is to pick a place like Kosovo or up in Germany or wherever, where they have a kind of like a holding camp of some sort. Get the people out. The problem is the State Department was trying to identify everyone before they left. And some of these people, they couldn't do it. And I get it. They don't want, you know, Taliban sneaking out or whatever, but Taliban doesn't have to sneak out. That's what's so stupid about that. Excuses. Well, we don't want the terrorists coming over. The terrorists are not gonna jump on a plane with a bunch of people. I mean, how many times has that happened in history that a terrorist has been caught just kind of coming in with a group of people? You know, I get it, but there were drug cartels in Mexico and stuff like that. Well, you get some people screaming through, but they're not gonna do it this way.
Well, they did say that they, you know, hey, we aren't gonna attack or do anything.
Yeah, and that was not adhered to.
They had a whole press conference about it.
Yes, exactly. And we're sitting there trusting the Taliban's telling us, we're going to let them go to the airport freely, and if they have the right paperwork, blah, blah, blah. But people had the right paperwork. We had one group that was turned, one family that was turned around about four or five times. We kept sending them up there saying, no, you have the correct paperwork. And we were even saying, you know, put us on speakerphone. We'll tell them. They all speak English, you know, so we're like, put us on speakerphone. They should know. And they would say no, turn these people around and go back. And, you know, and those, there were so many that were like that. I mean, that numbered in at least 1,000 just in a matter of hours that weren't able to get out. So there were planes that were leaving there with empty seats.
Yeah.
A ton of planes with empty seats. Yeah, so... And that's where we're at.
I've got the Washington Post article up right now from this is August 24th. CIA Director William Burns held secret meeting in Kabul with Taliban leader Abdul Ghani Baradar. That was oddly right after that press conference that the Taliban held.
Right.
That he held this closed door meeting with them. And it was, I mean, I remember making the joke on the show, kind of sounds like they're getting the game plan together.
Yeah. And that naturally would be the case. I'm sure some sort of agreements were made that we probably wouldn't approve of, but it's kind of like, you know, when you have a drug dealer going to jail and, you know, a murderer or somebody, if you want to find where the bodies are, you say, okay, we'll give you life instead of death. And you just tell us where the bodies are, you know, whatever it is, the agreement they came up with would probably be somewhat understandable, controversial, but somewhat understandable. But there's no way they adhere to it, because one of the agreements that we know about was the one you just mentioned, and that, hey, we'll let you go to the airport as long as you have the right paperwork and stuff like this.
Yeah.
And you guys can come through. And even if you're an interpreter or whatever, we'll look the other way. No, they did not do that.
Yeah.
They are systematically going back through and going after the interpreters and stuff like this. One of the people that I have on my list is a reporter that is very scared because of a situation that happened a few weeks ago, and where another reporter that had been, you know, female reporters in Afghanistan are not looked upon favorably by the Taliban at all. And so any one of those are in fear for their lives. And this one reporter a few weeks ago, they dismembered her body and left parts in different places. And as a sign that we're, we're the Taliban, we're here. And these situations are the very ones that I think would break the agreement. Any agreement that Burns made while he was there should have been, have some sort of consequence. If you do not adhere, if we see reports or if we like get verification of reports of you bypassing or not adhering to this agreement, we come back. You know, simple as that.
Yeah.
And, I kind of wish we, it would be nice to have about 3,000 guys just go back in there and do a sweep and get all the people out that we need to get out. But we're not going to see that.
Yeah, sadly, I think it's going to be, as many have said, it's going to end up being the Vietnam for Joe Biden. It really is. And, hey, not that he didn't vote for the whole thing to start, all that kind of good stuff. There are 100,000 reasons why we should not have gone to Afghanistan after 9/11. You know, there were so many things that pointed elsewhere, yet still that's where we went.
I agree.
And
I agree.
Been there since. So it's been horrible, the debacle that it's been, but it's even more horrifying what it's become in the aftermath and what we're literally, as a country, as a society, as the media, and as a government, willing to just turn our back on.
Yeah. You know, I have never in my life said that I disrespected or that I have hatred for a president.
Yeah.
Until now, I don't like saying it because I how patriotic I am for this country.
I know.
And when I even think those thoughts, there's going to have to be something that comes out down the road that explains all of this, that says the reason why we did it this way was because of this, and it has to make sense. But there is nothing I can see that makes sense on some of these decisions that are being made, whether it be the border in Texas where you are, or whether it's us pulling people out of Afghanistan, or all kinds of different decisions that are being made. I'm like, oh my God, is this really for real? Is this what we signed up for? I don't remember any of this crap.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't vote for Biden, and for obvious reasons, but even so, I mean, we have to lick our wounds. If your guy didn't win the presidency, you lick your wounds and you do the best of what you got. And I don't see any good outcome here. I don't see it.
Well, and you know me, I am as politically purple as you can get. I am neither pulled left nor right when it comes to my politic. However,
I am a registered independent.
it's one of those that I tend to agree with you. The decisions that have been made in the past many years, not just the last president, but the one before and the one before regarding border, things like that, have been pretty horrendous. But the fact that it is now just because, hey, at least with the last guy, it was in the spotlight. At least they were spotlighting everything that was going on at the border and you saw it.
Yeah, he did.
You ain't seeing it now, and it's still going on, and it's worse.
Well, no one's seeing it because no one's going to see. You know, they even tried to get CNN to stop using their drone, or Fox rather, to stop using the drone, and that got fixed relatively quickly. But you're looking at these situations where the number of people that are coming here. I mean, once you say borders open, green light, then all these people are coming in, saying, oh, Biden told us to come, so to speak. Okay, but you still have to go through the process. And apparently they kind of don't. And, if they don't go down and look at the situation for themselves, he put Kamala Harris in that position to go down and to review everything that's being done, and the decisions that were made, and the length of time it took for her to get down there, and then what was done after the fact, and then Biden that's the number one priority. And the other day, I think the numbers came out of the 20 or the number of weekends, the 50 some odd weekends that that have happened since he's taken office, not 50, because obviously that'd be a year, 40 some odd weekends, he's been away 20 of those weekends at Camp David or what have you. And so the excuse was given that he just hasn't had time to get down to see the border for himself. It has to be a very high priority on your crisis list to do that, and to say that you don't have time because of whatever the issues, yet you have these number of weekends off. But, you know, you could claim that about any president, I guess. You know, they can go on to play golf or go on to Mar-a-Lago or I'm California bound in my brain. But, yeah, you just sit there and wonder, and your jaw's on the floor just looking at all this as it happens, knowing that, man, I could go in there and do a better job than this.
It's been a little bit crazy, and I was just posting up an article from the Texas Tribune about five firms being considered for design and construction of Texas-Mexico border wall that Governor Greg Abbott promised. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people gave Trump a lot of kerfuffle about a border wall, things like that. You know, what's funny is that there are bits and pieces of a border wall all across the southern border of the United States, folks. And they've been there since the Clintons were around. Those were part of NAFTA when we started putting that stuff up and started looking at that.
And now there's acres and acres and acres of the wall that, you know, that they had ready to go up. And it's just sitting there. So.
Yeah. And, you know, border wall or not, that topic withstanding, the fact is the issue going on in Afghanistan, the issue going on immigration-wise, because it's literally the same thing, like you said. You can't say welcome in and not have the process ready.
Right.
You know, and at the same time, the same way that we left Afghanistan, saying, okay, well, we have a plan, but we're going to totally leave before it's time to implement that and you're ready. So we're out of here. Blenders on. See you later, man. Just take my clothes to Salvation Army. And we peaced out in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
And
then that seems to be
Chads and all. You know, it was literally like a crazy roommate moment where it's like, here's your key, dude, I'm out.
That's right.
And they just left. And at the same time, you knew the people that needed to be exfiltrated. You knew the people that were assets, that were cooperators, that were helpers, that were intense infrastructure, reporters, journalists that you needed to get out. Why were they not fast-tracked before your plan to leave to begin with?
Yeah, they should have been the first ones out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, okay, you made these promises. These people did exactly what we asked them to do.
Yeah.
Let's get them and their immediate families out, because if you don't get the immediate family out, then they're just going to be killed.
Yeah.
So pull them out, you know, as simple as that. It's something you would think would be so simple. Yeah. But in all of the interpreters I've talked to, not one has said that any... No one came to them, because keep in mind, these people, even though they speak fairly decent English, especially the interpreters, they don't know our processes. They don't know all these things. They think that if they're told something, that's what will happen. And then they're told they have to do this paperwork. Then they have to go over here and sign up here.
Well,
then they have to go to the end.
That's how their culture works. That's how things work over there.
Exactly.
You say you're going to do something and you do it.
Right. And so whenever everything was being wrapped up, these people should have been wrapped up as well and brought out. But no, they did it backwards. It's, you know, it's almost, you get the feeling that the military left first and then everybody else kind of trickled in behind it, even though that wasn't exactly the case. But that's the sense that you get from everything. And anyone, this is not one of those hindsight is 2020 things. Like we can look at it after the fact and go, well, yeah, it's easy to Monday quarterback this kind of thing. No, this is something that anyone could see that this is a problem. That's why there's so much bipartisan, people about this whole thing is both sides see that this is a problem.
Yeah. There has not been a single discussion since we went into Afghanistan to root out the Taliban, since we started building a democracy there, since we left them with the democracy there and occupied. There hadn't been a single time that the words power vacuum or vacuum of power have not been used in unison with the word Afghanistan. Because it is an understood fact that when you leave, somebody's going to come suck up that power. It's going to happen. And it's either the ones who, the alphabet agencies put in charge, because never forget, folks, like there was a whole power vacuum situation that happened years ago in a little country called Iraq.
And even before that, a little country called Iran. Remember the Shah?
Yep. And funny how the Shah came into being, CIA. Funny how, the original model for the most interesting man in the world, Saddam Hussein, came into power, CIA. You see those pictures of him in court, like he straight up looks like the most interesting man in the world. It's like, wow, didn't they just find you in a hole? How'd you get so dapper suddenly?
Exactly.
But we
create our own dilemmas. You're right.
It's nothing but power vacuum over there, and it's what you fill it with.
Yeah.
And we're not
going to change this region. We can argue that this region has been this way for thousands of years, and nothing's ever going to change it. And that argument's kind of getting old or whatever, but there is some truth to it.
Sure.
But at the same time, we don't understand. They go in with these assignments and these people that go to linguistic schools and all these different things to learn the area. And they come back with the understanding as to what is actually happening. But apparently that doesn't translate very well into the political arena.
No.
So we think that, we went in there and we fought your war for you. You should be thankful. That's not how they see it. No, your ass came in here. We were doing okay. We were probably going to get killed, but we want to get killed on our own grounds. We don't want the infidel to come in to do this stuff and then present us with new issues and then leave. And, it's not a situation where we didn't finish what we were doing. They had 300,000 members of the army that once we left, it was felt that, according to the Biden administration, that these individuals that were in the army, the 300,000 strong, were not, they didn't have the heart or the patriotic feeling for their own country or whatever they want to say. To actually fight for the country. They just felt like that they just kind of like gave up too soon, too quick, too early. And that's not necessarily how that happened. I mean, there's quite a bit of different reason because you have so many different groups of people. It's just like Iraq. Remember, there's five different, you had the Sunni, you had the Shiites and all this other stuff. So you have a similar situation in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, there's no border technically between Afghanistan and Pakistan. That border has been battled for years and years
It's a soft border, as it's called.
Exactly. It's a soft border. And it's kind of understood that it's like, okay, well, we can keep arguing about that. But any country that ends in Stan probably doesn't have a real border.
It's almost the equivalent of a gang border where it's like, hey, last week it was two blocks north of 3rd Street. This week it's two blocks south.
Exactly.
It's in constant flex and flux because of the constant combat that's going on and the constant tribal warfare going on between the two countries.
The last holdout was Pangaea. So you have the resistance that was battling in Pangaea. There's still question, even to this day, there's still question about what is actually going on there. And I'm monitoring flights, and I've got access to some satellite images and stuff. And I'm watching a certain other country get involved in it. I'm watching Turkey come fly over.
Yeah.
A Turkish plane is just flying over. Now, there's no overflights of Afghanistan. It's kind of like it was back during 9/11 when they shut down the airspace.
Yeah.
That, if you looked at flight radar 24 or whatever, any of the civilian type services, you'd see it's just a blank area. But that area, when you think about who the resistance is, it's just really the people that just live there. It's people battling for not a territory. They're not trying to take someone else's territory. They're just trying to keep their own. When you see what I saw, and the one of the persons that's on my list that contacts me daily, in fact, he just contacted me just before the show. He was there, and he had, I think I may have sent you something on this, but he had just had a situation with two Taliban where he had taken them out. And then as he was being ran out of the area, he turned around and the person that was with him was shot. And he continued on. He made it out and he went up into the mountains and called. And how, I don't know, to this day, I don't know how he got my actual cell phone number. This guy calls me. So I get this call and he's in panic and he doesn't know where to go. So I'm trying to walk him through, you know, what to do and stuff and get him to a safe area, what have you. So I had him in the mountains for days, but then finally got him down. But he's the one that sent those messages. I may have sent them to you. If not, I'll send them to you a little bit later. They're just gut-wrenching. I mean, they took a person that they thought was him over to his house and beheaded that person in front of his mother. And the mother was trying to tell him, tell the Taliban that is not him. And they thought that she was just trying to save her own son, but it literally wasn't. It was his cousin. So they beheaded his cousin in front of his mom, thinking it was him, which actually bought him some time, which in a very messed up way of thinking about this, that is the reality of it. But this is a vicious group of people, and those types of things basically basically went against the agreement that apparently Burns had, and there's no response from us.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Yeah. Literally nothing.
Yeah.
Literally nothing.
It's been pretty pushed down, and it really does need to come into the spotlight a whole lot more. We need to have you on a whole lot more with updates on this, for certain. As I contacted you earlier, I noticed that it'd been almost 2 months since you were on last, and I was like, wow, doesn't seem like it was almost that long ago. Like the article that I've been showing on screen is from 2 months ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, because
literally,
I kind of went dark right after when Afghanistan started. Yep. I think I had that one show after it started, and then with you, and I've been dark on my own. If you look at my channel, people think, man, is this guy even around?
Yeah.
Because I normally do videos at night. At night is when, you know, they're 12 hours and 30 minutes ahead of us.
So
my day is shifted. So during the night, I'm trying to coordinate efforts and stuff like this. Like right when I get off the show here, I've got to get a safe house situated. You know, we have no funds. There's nothing. There's no one is... the group that I'm with, we're all a bunch of individuals doing this. We're not... We haven't, like... reached out and created all these different fund me things or whatever. And this does take a toll. People don't understand this. I mean, when you're out of your own pocket for quite a bit, it starts catching up with you. But you keep trudging on until something shifts and you just rock on. You just keep doing it. And, I can't tell these people no or anything like that.
I don't think it's inside of you two to begin with, Mike.
It's not. The same thing happened in Vegas when I was there. I just wanted to get answers for everybody. And God, I had no idea that, you know, 4 years later that all of the scenarios that played out in that case, you know, and then maybe we can get to something a little bit lighter here with the Tiger King.
I was just about to say that is a perfect pivot point. Before we go to that pivot point, though, where can people go to, A, find out more about this? Where can they go to get involved? Where can they go if there are any funds out there? How can they get a hold? Can they get a hold of their congressman, their senator?
Yeah. What? Yeah. The congressman, like, I'm in Florida right now, and this is just happenstance that the person in Congress that I'm working with to get these people out of Afghanistan happens to be a Florida representative. So anyway, I'm currently working with Brian Mast, who is a representative for Florida. And everybody that we work through Congress, and we work through the Department of State. So that way everything, you know, is, there's multiple ways of trying to get these people out. Also another good one is Mike Waltz, another representative from Florida. And there's several. Just contact your congressman or congresswoman, unless it's Nancy Pelosi. Don't contact her. If you're in California, don't. No, just teasing. But contact whoever your congressperson is and work that scenario, you know, through them and say, hey, you know, what can I do to help these people?
Yeah.
And that's the scenario that you need to work on. If anyone, I mean, I don't have, there's no GoFundMe or anything like that as far as funds are. Yeah. So, I mean, if anyone wants to support the operation that I'm doing or that we're doing, the name of the organization I'm working with directly is Rescue Ops. It's LLC, or, you know, my own deal is obviously 5x5 News. But anyway, to see what, I don't make videos or I'm not doing any actual reporting on this, because I'm involved in it. It's kind of a weird scenario, because this is a little bit trickier than, say, the Las Vegas investigation, where everything was, you know, the shooting was over and I could report on it. And even though it was an active investigation to a degree, I still had to, you know, I could still talk about things. This is a little bit more touchy, but at the same time, we can report things out. But I generally give my intel to the congressman or various other groups and let them work it. But you can see me on Twitter. I will mention a lot of Afghanistan that they work on Twitter. So anywhere you search for 5x5 News is where you'll find me, whether it's on YouTube or on Twitter, or I took down the page on Facebook. I just couldn't monitor it, and I kept getting thrown in Facebook jail. So I was like, well, now it's Meta jail.
Yeah.
What the?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. What do you think about that, changing the name from Facebook to Meta?
I've been on show site all day. I knew it was coming. I knew it was a possibility. I posted articles about it being a possibility. But I have not had a chance to dig into that yet today.
As far as what that's all about.
Yeah. But I know I'm going to have to go through and replace a bunch of logos in a bunch of places.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that.
That's for certain.
Yeah, that little warp sideways infinity thing. But
as we move forward here, Mike, let's start talking about other investigations that you've been a part of. Because like you said, you were an integral part in a lot of what came out to the news about the Route 91 shooting in Mandalay Bay. A lot of what came out about the body being moved, things like that came from you. What part have you had to play? Because we had you on when the first Tiger King happened. And then there was the Tiger King, like, discovery show. The investigation discovery show that you and our good friend Rand Dennison worked on. But Tiger King 2 is getting ready to come out right now, and you were actually one of the many cogtooths involved with getting the disappearance investigation reopened for Carol Baskin's husband. Correct.
Well, that was, yeah, the search for, you know, what happened to Don Lewis is was key for that show. And I'll I will reveal now that I have talked with and had face-to-face meetings with Howard Baskin and Carol Baskin. I don't think I've ever actually told anybody that on the show, but yes, we have.
Wow, you and, never actually told me that, and we're friends, dude.
Yes, yeah, I've kept that kind of behind wow. the scenes. So, and many conversations, and there's only two people that Howard and Carol have trusted with the information that they have. And I am one of those two people. So in the very beginning, I guess it was what? Probably back when we started doing the Discovery ID thing, yeah. or right after. That's when I got really deep into it. So I started looking at the investigation. I come in with fresh eyes. I didn't come in with Carol Baskin killed her husband, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
I came in with just a very straight, I look at the actual evidence. I don't care what people say. I'm not an eyewitness kind of guy because I need to see stuff that's tangible and stuff like that. So I started looking at the evidence from that standpoint. So I received from her everything. I mean, literally every document, everything you could imagine that she had, and even things she hasn't even shared with her own attorney. I ended like the passports, stuff like this. I mean, I have all that stuff. And going through it and you're just trying to figure out, okay, if you didn't do it, then let's figure out who did. And she was very forthcoming. I mean, to the point where I would ask a question that would normally require a one or two sentence answer. And I would get like a 5 or 6 paragraphs. And that to me was, you know, you can look at it two ways. One is it's a lot more information than necessary or for one reason, or maybe it's if she's like me, which I find a similarity in that when somebody asks me a question, I tend to over explain the answer. And I think she's obviously guilty of that. But as we go through this, the Discovery ID thing, I became the director of photography for that. And in that case, I was working with Jim Rathman and with the Discovery ID crew. So when that was done, I couldn't go work for Netflix because there's a, you know, obviously a conflict there. And so what I did... Yeah, you couldn't do it because I was under an NDA and all kinds of different things. But as an investigator, there was a lot of things that needed to be done that no one could do. Apparently, they had, get this, there was 11 private investigators that were working on that case looking for a particular piece of information, and no one found it. One of those being who was... Mexican Mike. And that was a scenario that I don't know how they're going to play this in Tiger King 2 or how it's going to come out. But that individual was the key to the discovery of what happened to Don Lewis. The reason why they couldn't find him is because he's in the Federal Witness Protection Program. That's why they couldn't find him. And for me, that was just one of the areas when I started looking at court documents, I started seeing a couple of keywords that led me that I'm familiar with. I go, well, there's the pattern. He's probably yeah. being put into what's called, WITSEC, which is the actual term for the witness protection program. It's called WITSEC, WITSEC rather. And so when I found that, I was like, wow, okay, this is done. And then I went and dug up so much information on this guy. It was just unbelievable. So I did a small video about it. I didn't really push the information that much because I felt like it was going to be an issue with Netflix. But now that Tiger King 2 is coming out, November 17th, it's going to be out the day before my birthday. I am going to go ahead and release so much information that it might be a little bit on the ridiculous side. Case in point, there was a the person that they have flagged to be Originally, it was going to be Ripper. I don't know if anyone knows who Ripper is, but he is a guy that had a Facebook group, and he was apparently picked to be like the spokesperson for the family and stuff like this for the Don Lewis family. And as such, he, in the beginning, he was working with John Phillips, who's an attorney up in Jacksonville, who's took on that case. And then something happened between him and Ripper or whatever happened there, which I know what happened, but, you know, we'll just say whatever happened. And he went on. So this person, Ripper, had some issues that apparently that Netflix had already done a lot of filming with, and they pulled him from the show and they plugged in a different person, of which myself, a female, I won't name her name, and a guy named Jerry Mitchell was going to present a 3-panel body that was going to go in and actually do the show for Netflix. But I couldn't do it because of the Discovery ID conflict. But anyway, so the secret guy that you're going to see on the new show is Jerry Mitchell. So who is Jerry Mitchell? You're actually, no one knows this information, by the way. So whoever's listening to this, no one has this. What I'm revealing to you right now has not been spoken. If you search Jerry Mitchell, Tiger King 2, you're not going to see anything. So you are the first to get it. So if there's any Tiger King fans listening to this, you can say that you heard it first right here on Chris's show, Dudes and Beer, baby, or Curious Realm. You got to start plugging the new show. That your new kind of spokesperson, kind of the go-to talk guy in the show is going to be Jerry Mitchell. Now, Jerry Mitchell is from Mississippi. If you ever heard of the term Mississippi Burning, that is your reporter who basically turned in the Klansmen and stuff back in the 60s, I think it was. So that's Jerry Mitchell's claim to fame. He runs a organization there. I can't remember the name. It's like Mississippi. I can't remember the name. I had to look it up. But he's basically a reporter, and he's been at this for a long time. He's a great guy. And so he's going to be he's the guy that kind of took the place of Ripper. So that's what's happening in that regard. So TMZ, kiss my butt. I gave the information to TMZ, but they didn't believe it. So I was like, well, screw it. I'll give it to Chris.
Nice.
You got it. Yep. So anyway, so the way the show is going to be, the show is going to concentrate a little bit on the Don Lewis situation. They're going to go into some of the things that I gave information on, found like the brothel that was in Costa Rica and the connection down there. And there's a lot of the main thing is, where is Don Lewis's body? What happened that night? What are the conflicts? You've got Carol Baskin, who says that she saw him Monday early, which is the funny words that she says. And that Monday,
yeah,
saw him. And then that was the last time he was seen. Well, Ann, who was the secretary, saw him that previous Friday, and all weekend long she had been trying to get a hold of him, couldn't get a hold of him, and what have you. But other people said that they saw him either Saturday or Sunday. Here's the weird part. Here's the kicker. Here is the key to the entire thing about where Don Lewis is. On Sunday, at about mid-afternoon, Kenny Farr. Now, Kenny, you're going to Ken Farr is going to be the name that you're going to hear all over Tiger King 2. Kenny Farr was Don Lewis's right-hand man, and he left with a person by the name of Mexican Mike, and they went wherever they went on that Sunday, and Trish Farr, who was Kenny Farr's wife, saw them leave. They came back, or at least Kenny came back, with Don's blue van, driving Don's blue van, and pulled up to Ken's location, and pulled out a bunch of guns, which Kenny told Trish that this is Don's gun collection. He gave it to me. They put it in the bathtub. They put them under the bed. The guns were just everywhere. This has been confirmed that this happened to several people, but that event happening Sunday, and Kenny telling her the following words, I was trying to say as verbatim as possible, but telling her, do not speak about Don. Don is missing. No one knows where he's at. Don't even mention his name on the telephone. That's what Kenny said to Trish that Sunday night. Now, the next Monday morning, supposedly, is when Carol says she saw him in the doorway as he was getting ready to go to Costa Rica, and he got up early to do stuff. Yeah. And that whole night, Carol had some wild story that she had went to the grocery store to get some milk for the cats, and her car broke down, and then her brother, who's a Hillsborough County Sheriff's officer, happened to be on, and she was walking home, and she happened to hear his voice. You know, as she's walking home, and I've walked that path, so I know exactly where it's at. I've been to Big Cat Rescue and all. So I walked that path, and I'm sitting there going, how in the world? But it did happen. I mean, there is record of this event occurring. So I started looking at Carol's side of the story going, wow, a lot of the things that people are saying is total crap actually did happen. But there is obviously a conflict. If Ann, the last time she talked to Don was on Friday, and the key thing there was Ann was told by Don that he's going to go home and ask Carol for a divorce. And he had said he was going to do that before, but he said this time it was going to be serious. And that was the last Ann had heard. So Ann has now got that in her mind that, guys, Don left here. He went home, told Carol that he wants a divorce. Carol snapped. Whatever happened, happened. Yeah. And then you've got, you know, the story about Mexican Mike. He's kind of an odd character, and he's in prison for murder for hire.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Imagine that. What are the odds?
Wow.
And that was his deal. And the funny thing is while he was in Hillsborough County Jail, he was interviewed by a TV show. So I've got the actual television show that he was on.
Oh, wow.
I got Ding. Yeah, so I have that. And I sent some images from that to Trish, and she verified that that was the correct Mexican mic. So the odd thing is Rebecca and Eric Good. Rebecca is the producer of Tiger King. Apparently she, which I think is disinformation, said that she doesn't believe that that's the correct mic. And I'm thinking, do you not believe that's the correct mic because I'm the one that found him? Or is it because you want to do it on your own show with your own people? Or are you actually in belief of that? But she never would give me a clear answer to that. So I kind of believe the latter. So anyway, that's a lot of information.
It's a huge amount of information. When the first season ended, it was one of those like, I don't know, man. I don't know. And then you started getting into it with Investigation Discovery. And I remember joining Investigation Discovery for long enough to watch that because you and Ram were involved with it.
Appreciate it.
I always buy, I mean, quite obviously, I buy the books of my guests. I buy the shows of my guests. I am a huge supporter of such things.
Appreciate that. You always have been. You've always been a great host. And
it's just... Appreciate that. It's one of those, like, how was this case ever even closed?
Yeah.
Is the question.
Yeah, there's just so much back at that time. The case was never closed. It was an open case the entire time. They never had a way to close it. But what they did do was they went ahead and Carol had filed some paperwork to state that, you know, if Don never comes home, what do I do? And you fill out his paperwork, and on the fifth year, if nothing happens, then he could be declared dead. That way insurance policies can be paid and, you know, whatever bills or whatever property, you know, is being held up in some sort of weird limbo. That's what that's for. So and that was actually done. You know, and there's a lot of controversy to that too. I mean, this whole thing, there's so many pockets of intrigue. And this is just the craziest, most bizarre show that you could imagine. And here's the weird thing. When you see these people, how they are on the show, they are not acting. They are not doing that just because the camera's there. I can personally tell you that I've witnessed it myself, that these people are that way.
I was going to say, there's a certain amount, and whenever you watch any, I mean, it's editing. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's entertainment, everything mm-hmm. else.
Yep.
But there is investigation that goes on. There is, I mean, just like in making a murder or anything else, there are groundbreaking things that happen and are found along mm-hmm. the way of these things.
Yep.
So what? How has your involvement in this changed your opinion of the case?
Well, I can say the thing is that my opinion, I have to remain as objective as sure, possible. I can't say Carol did it. I can feel pretty confident in saying that she didn't do it. I can't say, and I've even told this to her. I mean, she if she listens to this, she'll know. I'll send her a link to it. I sat there and when we first met, I always were sitting right across from each other, and you know, Howard says, "Well, what are your thoughts about, you know, what's going on, and what do you feel now?" And so, and Howard and I talked a lot more than I had with Carol. But I said, well, here's my feelings at the moment based on the information I have so far, which was very limited. And I didn't have access to all the conservatorship and all the legal paperwork and stuff. So I was sitting there and I told Carol, I said, listen, I said, my opinion is this, that something happened and Don was either killed or something happened, maybe an accident or whatever, and that you have knowledge of that. But at the time, you panicked. You didn't know what to do, whether it was your dad that killed him or whether it was you that killed him. And I said it right to her face. I said, whether it was you that killed him, Kenny that killed him, or somebody else. Somebody, I feel that you have more information than you're willing to divulge for whatever reason. And that's your prerogative. But it's going to be very difficult to do an investigation without knowing this stuff. So if I find this information, then I'm just letting you know I have to do what I have to do, you know.
Yeah, it's gonna come and, out.
Yeah, and she looked at me and she says, you have everything, you whatever you need, and every question I've ever asked her, I've got to be honest with you, every question I've ever asked her, she has answered in full. So it's wow. it's very bizarre, you know, but the things that I still have question with, I mean, it still could have been her father. You know, because her father hated Don. There's a situation where
dishwasher at the IHOP.
It could have been any number of people, but the people that I feel are in the, now, keep in mind, I've had people contact me and I've got some bizarre conversations. This one guy contacted me and says that he went over and there was a ketamine party that they were having and Carol was all whacked out and
sweet,
all this other stuff. And I'm like going, dude, are you serious?
Now that was probably the Waffle House crowd.
Yeah, there probably was. I was like, oh, my God. But this guy wanted money. He said Rebecca had paid him like $3,000 or $5,000 just for his story. And I was like, oh, man, this shit ain't going to be on Tiger King, too. What the hell?
Wow.
Yeah, he was just looking for whatever fame, I guess. But, yeah, I'll probably mention him in a story or two. But it's been an experience. I tell you, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I think the level of access that I've had to Carol and Howard is unprecedented. No one else has
wow.
it. But the thing is I've been pretty quiet on Tiger King out of respect for the investigation because I'm probably going to kick myself in the butt because I didn't do like weekly shows and updates on here's what's happening now. But if I would have done that, no one would talk to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I would have went in there and just the week before I had done a show that basically ripped Carol apart, do you think Carol would talk to me? No.
Yeah.
So I didn't do that. And I still won't do that out of respect, not to Carol or Howard or Rebecca or Eric or Joe or whoever, because I've talked to everybody. Mm. It's out of respect to the investigation. I don't have an answer. I can't say definitively, you know, without a doubt, walk into, you know, Corporal Garcia, who is the detective handling this, and say, here's who did it, and walk out the door. But I think I've got the closest information, especially when it comes to Mexican Mike. I feel pretty confident of the people that I know have knowledge And I think if I sat down with them within 30 minutes or so of some very specific type questioning, I think we could get to the bottom of it. But wow. We didn't do that. So
wow.
Well, maybe there'll be a Tiger King 3.
And you can be involved in it.
Oh, I will be. I think if there is a Tiger King 3, I guarantee you I will be direct in that one. I don't think because there's no way after this one, after I reveal the information that I already have, there's not going to be really like, I'm not going to jump out there and try to get on a bunch of TV shows and crap like that. That's not my style. You know that. I'm just going to put the information out there and say, here's what I found. Here's what it is. I'm going to do it before it comes out. That way I can say, look, yeah, there's the date right here, bro. Yeah. And go from there and see what happens. But the main thing is I want justice for John. I think everyone wants that. I don't think there's anyone that doesn't, other than the people that might be a party to it. You know, that should happen. But there's a lot of things that went on behind the scenes that a lot of people were painted in some very favorable light, and they were not really favorable people at all. So yeah, that's going to come out.
What do you think the odds of John's release are?
Say again?
What do you think the odds of the King's release are?
Joe will be out. He's got John Phillips is his attorney up in Jacksonville. They've already filed the paperwork. They are getting a new hearing as far as a resentencing hearing. So that is going to happen. And that should happen here pretty quick. But as far as the as him getting actually out, that all depends on how the judge reviews the information that they have, of which part of that's going to be, and I guess, I don't know if I can even say this. I'll say it anyway. We're too close.
Do it.
Okay. Here's what's going to be said. What's going to be said is that the FBI agent and a lot of the information that was given on the original court case, was either fabricated or was acquired, in not so professional ways, and there was there's the things that were done. There was no money that changed hands directly and stuff like this. Alan is the guy that received the money that was supposed to come down to Florida to actually do the original deal, and then they fake hired this FBI agent, and that's what got the ball rolling that way. I'm not saying Joe is a saint. I'm not saying Joe is a sinner.
No,
but between the two. What they did, and here's the kicker. Here's why he's in prison to begin with. They took the animal case and they put it on with the other case, mm-hmm. the murder for hire case. If they would have kept those cases separate,
yep.
It would be a different outcome, because no one in history has gone to prison because they killed a cat,
yep.
Period.
Because they
no
put
one.
An animal down.
Exactly. No yep. one has done that. They've been fined. They've had to do, service, community, whatever it is they've done, or, community stuff, whatever. But no one has been sent to prison for 22 years for that. And they feel that by showing, if you show cruelty to an animal, to a jury, and then say, and this guy also was going to kill Carol Baskin, and keep it inside the same case where the jury members have very vivid memory of that part. Then, it's going to be I feel that was done improper, and that case would not have been the same outcome if they had been separated.
Well, I think it's really going to come down to the point of it being a fruit of the poison tree situation, quite honestly, where you had the gentleman who planted the seed to Joe, because it make no doubt, folks, like, what was it? Mike, we just lost Mike. But make no mistake, folks, there was definitely the fact that there was a couple $1,000 that changed hands. We're calling Mike back right
there
now.
There you are.
That's how live we are here, folks. We don't even care. We can call him back right now. You're lucky it's not like an old school touch dial where people could, like, record that number. You know, phones freak you all night long. But I was just saying, as I was calling you back,
right.
Yes, I know you're sick of me now, but it's a fruit of the poison tree situation, especially if the fact that the gentleman who Joe paid to go supposedly kill Carol Baskin was planted by Carol Baskin to plant the seed to go kill Carol Baskin.
Well, we're talking about Alan. The weird thing there is,
I mean, it sounds like a convoluted story, but am I getting that wrong?
Yeah, you are. But, okay, but okay. That's okay.
Iron that out for us, because I mean.
Yeah, there was a lot of things. I mean, people thought that the Carol's husband was the Kenny or this new people. You know, it's all these different misidentifications of people. And one of the first things I was asked to do was to find out. That was the first thing I did. So that was first thing I brought to the case. But anyway, the main thing is that a lot of these kind of the side stories that try to make other pieces fit kind of in the overall scheme of things, that it doesn't really fit. It kind of just muddies the water. And even, you know, that one, I don't even know where it originated from. There's a lot of mystery over some of these cases or some of the scenarios that were played out, like with Jeff Lowe, anything involving Jeff Lowe.
Yeah.
It truly has multiple stories attached to it.
Yeah.
There was one about the note that was sent.
It's just a convoluted mess.
Yeah, exactly. So you have the note that was sent that basically said, I know who, who killed Dawn, and here's this, and here's where his body is, and you've got five or six of these stories. And I have been to keep in mind, the only person that dove Darby Lake is me.
Yeah.
The video that you see where Ripper's crew is in Darby Lake diving, they didn't dive. I talked to the dive master. He says they didn't go. There's a safety issue. So I've gone to these locations where the body's supposed to be, and looking at the evidence, there's two new locations that no one's aware of. That one involves a certain regulatory agency that when it comes out, you'll know what I mean. Where they dug some pits to put some things into the pits, according to the government agency telling them to do it. And they think that Don could possibly be there, and then the septic tank, I'll send you the picture of the septic tank. I was actually standing on it. The one that they believe that he was under,
yeah.
So I looked at it with some very, particular eyes to see if maybe it had been recently dug up and something removed or whatever, but no, None of those stories have really panned out. I mean, I even went behind a Publix that's down here where there was some property behind the Publix, and there's supposed to be something there. But none of this has really panned out. If someone had the money to do it and go search all these locations, or they might turn something up. But keep in mind, Carol's story, which is the most unbelievable of all of them, and I've even said this to her and Howard, is that Don had gotten that experimental airplane and had went out over the Gulf, and that's where he's at. He crashed because he liked that he would fly places and fly under the radar. Well, that you're not going to fly that plane down to Costa Rica, number one. Even if you hug the hug the coast going down and get gas periodically or whatever. But there's an experimental ultralight. He was supposedly going to see, and that was the reason why he took the van. And this is bouncing all over the place. Anyone that's listening to this that doesn't know the story is probably confused as hell. But the blue van was actually parked at the airport to make it seem like Don had went to the airport and took off in a plane.
Yeah.
The problem is that Don had done no business with that guy at the airport because they had a run-in about a plane that was sold or some money issue or whatever. And so whoever planted that blue van at the airport, which has to be Kenny. So Kenny, if you're listening, yeah, that was me at your house. But anyway, whoever planted the blue van at the airport, Kenny, was not fully aware of the dynamics of the relationship that Don had with the person that ran that little airport. And so that was a huge mistake. And that was an easy one to start figuring things out. And the van was wiped down. There's no prints in the van except for the guy that worked on the van the previous week, which obviously that guy had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, in the engine compartment, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. So the van was allowed to be picked up and taken back to Big Cat Rescue. And then the cops took the van and did the forensic that worked out or whatever. But they said there were no prints. There weren't, and Carol had said that she drove the van home. Her or Vernon, her dad, had driven the van home. Even their prints weren't on there, which means someone wiped down the prints at Big Cat Rescue.
Yeah.
So that brings up a lot of questions that brings Carol back. There's so many things that keeps bringing Carol back into it. You can never rule her out. And so as much as she tries to, you know, make the story point other directions, it still keeps pointing either back to her or that there's just too much that's going on that only she or she would have to have knowledge of.
Yeah.
And that's where I have an issue. But
hearsay and conjecture, best guess, Mike, her brother, the cop, have anything to do with any of that?
I think if he did, I have no evidence to support that. What I can say is
the friendly brush of the law, like, well, you know, that's Johnny's sister. You know, I mean, Johnny's a good guy.
Yeah. And that's what's so funny is I don't even have anything that would say that occurred. I don't think anything like that actually happened. If it did, there's no one that says, yeah, I remember her brother coming up to me, because they were pretty much estranged from each other. They hadn't seen each other in like a long time. They weren't like, you know, very close or anything like that, but which is odd because she's
to get a random ride in a cop car.
Exactly. And for her to remember his voice in the middle of the night talking on the radio.
And oddly enough, for there to be a record of the radio call coming from that area.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and that brings up points of alibi. And here's one of the other big
points of alibi and also potential points of collusion.
Yeah, exactly. 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 So her mystery trip to Albertson's at 11 o'clock at night when Albertson's, you know, closed. Yeah. You know, she says, well, Albertson's was closed when I get there.
Albertson's didn't open at 11 o'clock at night.
Well, there a lot of them back at that time were open 24 hours a day.
I
remember, because I used to live there.
I guess that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But that particular one, someone had found an ad for when the store had opened, but the ad was from 10 years previous showing that it was open 24 hours. So we had to go. I had to go through a whole bunch of stuff. Me and this female that was working with me. She did the animal side. I did the criminal side of the investigation with Howard and Carol. So I'll just put that out there, and people will figure out who she was. But as she handled the animal side, I handled the other side. We both kind of tackled this Albertson's thing, and it was very difficult to figure out. But finally, we kind of got the information saying that, yeah, the Albertson's would be closed by the time she got there. So that story checked out. Then there was the thing about the signs that they had, the real estate signs that Wendell was going to pick up or get the next morning. And that's what Don was getting up to do, was to take those signs over to Wendell's place. And so that brings Wendell into the equation. The signs got to Wendell's house. How did they get there?
Well, he got up early, you know.
Early,
plenty of time to go pick up signs and go to Wendell's, then go fly an experimental aircraft into oblivion.
Yeah, exactly. So he went over there, you know, dropped off the signs, drove out of the airport, you know, was flying experimental aircraft and crashed, and you know, the keys were in the van, and his suitcase was there, his briefcase that was there with all his, you know, paperwork that he carts around with him, but at an airport that he despised the owner of the airport. It's like somebody was making really weird, bad errors. It's like, did you take the van to the airport? Yes. Okay. Just out of curiosity, which airport did you take it to? Blah, blah, blah. Not that airport. No, wrong airport. Well, you can't go pick up the van now. you can just imagine being a fly on the wall of this complete haphazard way of doing things. And there had to be a lot of screw-ups. But not apparently not, because no, we don't know who killed Don, and it's, what, 24 years later? Or not, 24.
Yeah.
25 years almost. Yeah, 24 years. It was 1997, August 97. So, yeah. That's where we are, man. And there's so much more into it. If we did a live show on this before Tiger King comes out with audience participation, it would be really a lot of questions and stuff going back and forth. I'm sure that a lot of people are going to want the direct answers to. You'd have a field day with that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the whole story in and of itself. I mean, there's a reason why there's a documentary about it, folks. It is, go look it up. If you haven't watched Tiger King 1, or if you haven't watched the Investigation Discovery series, go watch it. It is one of the most fascinating pieces of Americana that you can get. And the whole twisted story behind all of it, the feud between the two of them, not just the passion for the animals, but the passionate loathing for each other.
Yep.
And really, like, hey, Joe, I love you, dude, but... Here's the thing. Had you not made a lot of the videos you made, maybe you wouldn't be where you're at.
That's true.
And that goes for a former employer I have as well.
I don't know who you're talking about.
You know, like, maybe if you hadn't said a lot of those things on video and kept them around on the internet, maybe you wouldn't be where you're at.
Yeah. And start pleading the fifth.
And that's the thing. Ratings can lead down a bad rabbit hole. And I really think that this is a perfect storm of three different situations where the utter competition between Joe and Carol was its own entity to begin with. Like, that was its own egregore that the both of them brought to life, mutually.
So if you're one of the seven people that did not see it,
you gotta watch it.
And the trick to watching it is the first two shows are kind of out there. It's kind of like your mind's kind of wondering whether or not you're
nothing
watch
out
it.
There about the whole situation. What the hell are you talking about? The whole situation.
The hook is the third episode. The third episode is the hook. That is the one that once you get to that one, you're done. Yeah. You're toast. There's no getting out
from there. It's rabbit hole, and that's just it. Like it's been a wild ride because this thing premiered like right as people went into lockdown.
Yep.
You know, which is what really made it the phenom that it was. And what I mean, and really kind of thank God, because I think had it not been the case, I do not think it would have gotten the fanfare that it did.
No, agreed. Absolutely.
And I don't think that the case would have gotten the attention it did.
Right.
I don't think that it would have gotten the publicity of trying to get a presidential pardon.
Right.
And I don't think that Cold Case would have been reopened, or not reopened, but flipped about.
Right, exactly.
Because it wasn't a closed case. It was a cold case. It's sitting in the back corner, and it's not really anything that, like, we're putting anything on anytime soon.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Not only was the case... I don't want to say still active to the point, but when you call the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department and you're at a lake that you believe you found something with cadaver dogs, and then, you know, people like cadaver dogs 20 some odd years later, yes, they can actually, believe it or not, they can actually do that. But when you call
them, there's still bone. There's
and you have divers on scene within 2 hours, that right there tells you that there's a lot to this case. I mean, literally, just Jim called down to Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department and says, "Hey, we're at the lake, blah blah blah. Our dog's hit." And within 2 hours, the divers are there. That's amazing. So that tells you that the story has a lot of reach, and that law enforcement is still actively looking for whatever's going on. But I got to say, too, I mean, there's a whole other story about the law enforcement side of this. It just seems like a lot of balls were dropped, especially way back in the beginning of this scenario, that a lot of the evidence was probably, tampered with, so to speak, to the point, obviously, yeah, like missing fingerprints and everything like that. They dropped the ball. But we'll see what happens during Tiger King 2. We'll see if there's any Corporal Garcia.
Possibly forged documents from Dawn.
Well, they're all forged. I will tell you this, and I'll go on record. Every person in that office forged everyone else's signature in that office. And if anyone tells me any different, I don't care who it is, whether it's Carol or whether it's the daughters or whether it's some guy off the street or Wendell or whoever, everyone was forging documents back then. And I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying everybody to point their finger at Carol when half of everybody else is forging their own documents.
Well, it's kind of like whenever you see the provenance of a presidential signature, they have to make sure that it wasn't A, a stamp, or B, an assistant.
Right, exactly. And that does present some issues. It definitely presents issues for Carol. I'm not saying Carol's innocent,
but
because
it's typically not common practice to have a last will and testament.
Yeah.
Stamped with a signature or signed by another party.
Yeah. Or it actually state that they changed the standard wording in the last will and testament was upon my death, blah blah blah. But this one actually was changed to state upon my death or disappearance. It's like, and then her reasoning for it, which, in a roundabout way makes sense, that he's going to Costa Rica. It's an area that's famous for people taking Americans hostage and keeping them for money or whatever. So upon his disappearance.
That's where he went to get his cats and all that kind of stuff. He had huge connections there for all of his wild animals, everything else.
He's actually building a zoo down there. He was wanting to move there. So he had a brothel down there and everything. And three-story apartment building, all that stuff.
Wow. Man, Mike, thank you so much for always coming on the show, sharing your deep, in-depth knowledge of investigation and the wild facts that you dig up in the middle of it.
Yeah, I get in some very varied, it's not like I have a criminal, like I go down just the murder path or I go down this. My cases are just all over the map. It keeps life interesting. I can say that for sure. But at the same time, I'll sit at a bar and somebody will say and you start chatting up and they go, "What do you do?" And you start talking and they look at you and you're like, within 5 minutes, they're going to think I'm completely full of crap or one of the most interesting people they've ever met. Oh, God. Yeah, you don't want to be me like that. You there? Did I lose you again?
Oh, no. Sorry about that. I was just saying, you are both definitely one of the most interesting people I have ever shared space and microphones with. So there is no doubt about that. And once again, I want to thank you for always coming on this show, sharing your in-depth knowledge, sharing topics like what we spent the whole first part of the show on properly, the exfiltration of people from Afghanistan, things like that. You're always here helping us out, bringing us incredible topics and incredible backstories to go along with them.
Appreciate that. And I appreciate you. You've always been a gentleman and a great host. I remember when Shannon turned me on to you and we did that first show from that point forward. So this guy's, I mean, we never find a moment where we don't have something to talk about. And that's awesome. So it's just such a smooth flow and I enjoy doing your show. It's just fun to do it. So I'm always there for you and I'll try to drop exclusives on there when I can. So you've got a couple tonight.
Yeah, we do. And stay tuned for Tiger King 2, folks. It'll be coming from Netflix soon enough. Make sure that you go out and check out what was the show on Investigation Discovery?
That's Joe Exotic. Just put Joe Exotic and Investigation Discovery or Discovery ID. Yeah, it'll pop up. There's three episodes that were done for that. And then to find my stuff, just search for 5x5 News, which is 5x5 News or what have you. Mostly it's going to be on YouTube or Twitter. Mm-hmm. And go from there. And I appreciate it.
That's right. We have it up on screen right now. And Mike, thank you so much once again. Hold the line while we close things out here. While we have that up on screen, we're also going to bring up the Dudes and Beer podcast, everybody. Make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That is where you can find all the episodes. That is where you can find all the declassified documents, everything else. We are all of four episodes away from becoming the Curious Realm, and I cannot believe it. Stop by and check it out. Google it, CuriousRealm.com. Till next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. If you can't be good, be good at it. We've only got four more episodes with that tagline.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.